Welcome to First Fuel, a fortnightly podcast bringing you perspectives on the role of energy efficiency, energy management and demand response in the energy transition taking place in Australia and around the world. I'm Luke Menzel, CEO of the Energy Efficiency Council. This week I'm joined by social entrepreneur, broadcaster and philanthropist John Dee. Welcome, John, and how are you doing up there in New South Wales?
Oh, thanks for having me on. Look, it's a beautiful day up here in the Blue Mountains and looking forward to having our chat.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, John, you have had a storied career touching on all manner of topics, environmental activism, humanitarian work, broadcasting, the list goes on. But one consistent theme has been a keen interest in energy generally and particularly energy efficiency. What sparked your passion for energy efficiency?
Look, I think it's common sense. I've always focused on the practical things that people can do to reduce their impact on the environment. Back in 1986 was when I took on my first full-time environmental role. It was with an organization called Earthlife. Mm. And our byline was where conservation means business. We wanted to show that, well, business should be in the business of conserving resources, because it made sense on the basis that if you reduced your use of materials, inevitably that would also reduce your costs. And we also wanted to show, you know, that was the second meaning to our byline, where conservation means business. We wanted to show that it made sense financially to be taking the environment into account, taking sustainability into account. Now, when I started Planet Ark with Pat Cash in 1991, we wanted to focus on what households could do to make a difference. And when I left Planet Ark, I decided to focus on what businesses could do. And the easiest and most obvious thing a business can do is to become more efficient, you know, whether it's energy efficiency or materials efficiency, because there's one basic thing I think a lot of businesses get is that when you reduce your use of energy, you cut your energy bills. That's a really easy thing to sell and get businesses to understand. It's a guaranteed way to, you know, improve the profitability, the resilience, and often the value of the business. And when companies, as you well know, when they invest in energy efficiency, you know, the financial benefits can be really significant. So a lot of my focus has been on that bottom line benefit of efficiency, because I think it's something that governments haven't done enough to promote. You know, we often get caught up in just focusing on the glitzy new stuff instead of doing the basics like efficiency.
And over the many years you've been thinking about, engaged on this topic of energy efficiency, have you noticed a shift in the way that businesses or indeed governments are thinking about this topic? Is it rising up the agenda in your view?
I don't think it's rising up enough. I think when a business has a strong focus on energy efficiency, that usually leads to an increase in the productivity and efficiency of a business. And if you engage your staff in that process, you often get a better staff engagement, you get better buy-in as well. And you know, I was talking about this with Lisa Jackson the other day. Lisa is the global head of sustainability and energy and social issues at Apple. And we were talking about it, and she said, you know, the cleanest form of energy is the energy you don't use, words to that effect. And I think we need to focus more on that reduction of energy use. There are businesses who really get that. You know, I noticed with a lot of the businesses I talked to for RE100, which we're going to talk about shortly, the businesses that have made a big move into renewables have really understood that before you get into renewable energy, you really should be reducing your overall use of energy itself. And I think a lot of businesses that are part of the Green Building Council get that. A lot of major businesses using a lot of energy get that. But I think the problem is I've done hundreds of speeches around Australia for when I go out and with my books on sustainability and energy efficiency. The problem we have as a country is that the small to medium-sized businesses are doing very little when it comes to being energy efficient. And I think that is an area where the government really needs to step up education and assistance to make it easier for those businesses to reduce their energy bills. Because if we can get them being more energy efficient, inevitably, as I said, you can also get other benefits, you know, like material efficiency and other you know, when you start identifying efficiency and energy, you often end up simultaneously identifying other benefits that will make your business perform better too.
Well, energy efficiency is really where you start on that clean energy journey. And as you say, there are many larger corporations in an Australian context that have heard that message and have really acted. But it's, as you say, one thing for a relatively sophisticated big business to go on a journey. If you're a small or medium-sized business with a bunch of competing priorities, it's potentially a bit more challenging.
Well, look, that's why I wrote the book Energy Cut. You know, the Gillards and then the Abbott governments funded me to go around and talk to small businesses and medium-sized businesses. And over the course of 4 years, I visited hundreds of businesses. And I was surprised by the number of small to medium-sized businesses who'd never properly measured their energy use. They'd never done an energy audit. You know, inevitably, when I went to a community, I also gave a speech in that community for the local Chamber of Commerce. And one of the common things I do in my speech is I ask people to put their hand up which of you here has actually called up your energy company and seen if you can get a better deal? And you would only get a handful of people putting their hand up. So even the most basic thing that can immediately save you money is to just call up and ask for a better deal. And it's amazing how much money you can save there. So businesses often would whinge about their energy bills, but not actually do anything at the most basic level. Then you would, you know, when it came to turning things off, you know, I'd go into some places, you know, because I'd do a speech and someone would say, come and have a look at my place. And you go there and it would be like the Starship Enterprise, all fully lit up with hardly anything turned off. So that was quite a common thing as well. Lighting is definitely dramatically improved, you know, with the switch to LED. Having said that, you know, I went to a huge industrial facility 3 years ago to meet the managing director, and he was very proudly showing me around this big facility, and I noticed all the lighting was like still fluorescent. Everything was fluorescent. And I said, why haven't you got LEDs? And he said, oh, well let's go and ask, we'll go and ask the energy manager. He's, you know, his office is down the hall. So we went and saw him, and he said, oh, well, you know, we recently did an audit, and, you know, it just didn't make sense financially to switch to LED. And I said, how could that be? You know, it's illogical what you're saying to me. I said, so how recently did you do the audit? There's been a lot of change in technology with LED. And he said, oh, quite recent. And I said, how recent is that? I eventually got out from him that he'd done it in the year 2000. And this was only 3 years ago, you know, so it is amazing sometimes how you get that. But my favorite story I came across was, one guy who had a Macca's franchise, and he had enough of his staff members continually playing with the thermostat. Because, you know, I think if you had to look at what was one of the most common mistakes that businesses make at a small and medium-sized level, it's always having the thermostat set wrong. And he got so sick and tired of the, you know, having it either too hot or too cold, driving up his energy bill. He actually installed a fake thermostat, and he hid the real thermostat in his office. So all these people would, you know, he told them not to touch it. And he said one of the things that gave him a giggle was seeing these people, you know, subtly trying to like quietly turn this fake thermostat, which actually did nothing. So I thought that was actually quite an interesting way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose when I reflect on small and medium business, the thing that I'm very conscious of is that they have a huge number of competing priorities and often not a lot of support, right? So,
yes,
you know, I guess when you and I talk about governments needing to play a role, it's almost recognising that, because for any one business, this is one of a million things that they have on their mind and often not the top of the agenda. But in aggregate, the failure of all of those individual businesses not to act is so consequential for the economy and for the environment that it's a problem that we need to collectively find a way of solving. But one of the reasons I really wanted to invite you onto the podcast, John, is because you've been thinking about how to communicate these issues for many, many years, not least through your Smart Money program, which you and I have joked is it was in its time effectively a stealth advocacy vehicle for energy efficiency in many ways, because you were really highlighting the case studies of some of those businesses that had acted and had derived significant wins by acting. So I was interested in your thoughts on what effective communication looks like in this space, how you can motivate action on a topic that, as we say, isn't necessarily at the top of the agenda.
Well, for people who don't know what we're talking about here, Smart Money was a live weekly TV show that I wrote and presented on Sky Business Channel, and did 115 episodes, which I wrote and presented, did about 700 stories. And the one thing every story had in common was it was about showing how sustainability and efficiency brought about a great outcome for the bottom line, but also had good sustainability benefits. But I could often go through a whole show just talking about bottom line benefits and finances without even once mentioning, you know, the C word. You know, climate, carbon, emissions, environment. You know, I didn't have to mention those words in order to sell the business argument that this was just good, plain, common sense. And what I did was, with those 700 stories that I did, went out to the best businesses with the best case studies, the best stories on how they had transformed their businesses in a way that was good for the bottom line and good for sustainability outcomes. One of the great things about that show was it gave me the ability every week to interview someone live via satellite from the London Stock Exchange. And so I used to get really senior people coming on the program from overseas. I went to America a couple of times and did some specials, did a big business summit event in the UK. Okay. So I was able to get really compelling speakers and interview subjects where I could talk to some of the world's biggest businesses about the ways in which they had changed for the better in a way that was saving money. And, you know, when businesses are watching that kind of information, seeing their peers doing this, it makes it a lot easier for them to then go to their financial director or managing director and make a business case. Because if you can say, you know, for example, in the interview I just did with Lisa Jackson for Energy Insights, this is my kind of follow-up video series now, which I'm launching on March 25th. Energy Insights is like, I guess, a follow-up to Smart Money, where I'm going to be interviewing global leaders on from business, from the, you know, who are in charge of sustainability. And the very first person I've interviewed is Lisa Jackson, who's the, you know, the global head of sustainability, energy and social issues at Apple. And she talks about this, you know, throughout the whole interview. It's about how Apple has become sustainable because it makes business sense. And if you look at all the companies that have joined RE100, for most of them, there is a really compelling, strong business case for how they're dealing with energy. As you said before, reduce your energy use as a starting point, becoming energy efficiency to the max, and only then start looking at how you then make that switch to going 100% renewable.
Speaking particularly in an Australian context, there's been businesses, some that have been motivated by one of the C words, carbon. probably more that, as you say, have been motivated by the other C word, a cost. But obviously, in the last couple of years, in an Australian context, John, have been quite remarkable in terms of the increasing corporate engagement around climate, around the Paris Agreement, around the need to be showing leadership on those sort of climate and carbon related issues. Do you think the scales are evening up? Do you think that carbon is becoming more of a driver and forming a little bit of a pincer movement with the traditional motivator of cost?
I think without a doubt. One of the things I found with RE100, you know, RE100 is a fantastic initiative that was started by the Climate Group in partnership with CDP. You know, right from day one, you had people like IKEA and Swiss Re involved. And the idea of RE100 is to get companies to commit to go 100% renewable with their electricity use. Already, we've got more than 280 major companies around the world that have signed up. Dozens of them have already gone 100% renewable with their electricity use. For many of them, carbon is a key driver in that, reducing, you know, carbon emissions. But equally, what many of them speak about quite openly is the fact that it actually makes business sense to be doing it as well. So it's a win-win situation. Here in Australia, I've been heading up RE100 on behalf of Climate Group and CDP through the Do Something Foundation that I run over here. And so far, you know, we've managed to get the big five banks on board. That was our target for the first year. Get, you know, let's show that if we can get the big five banks on board, it says, it sends a strong message that, you know, if they say it makes financial sense, then it must be that way. You know, and then in terms of the, you know, we've managed to get many other major companies. Woolworths, for example, recently joined. They use 1% of Australia's electricity. They're going to go 100% renewable by 2025. We've got Sun Metals just joined just before the before Christmas. Second biggest individual user of electricity in Queensland. You know, they have run a huge zinc refinery, already have a massive solar facility, and it makes business sense for those companies to be doing that. We've already got in Australia, Mars have gone 100% renewable here, so have Unilever. You know, so you're seeing really major brand name companies who are part of RE100 stepping up, making that commitment and delivering it. And what is exciting about RE100 is that it's actually delivering real change. Just the 15 companies that we've signed up so far have a market cap of $620 billion. And between them use about 5 terawatt hours of power a year. If you add up the 280 RE100 global members, their combined electricity use is more electricity than we use here in Australia. And all of that is going 100% renewable. Now, our argument is if 280 companies of this scale using more energy than Australia can actually go 100% renewable, then there's no reason why Australia can't do the same. If the business case is that strong that those businesses can make that move, there's no reason why government can't follow that lead. And I think that is what is important about RE100 and other corporate initiatives, is that businesses have led the way. In many cases, you know, we don't get involved in politics at RE100, but, you know, I think everyone would agree, you know, in certain countries, the politicians fell behind and businesses, to their credit, stepped up to make that difference. And I think RE100 is probably the best example of that.
First Fuel is brought to you by the Energy Efficiency Council, a not-for-profit membership association for businesses, universities, governments and NGOs. The Council's mission is to unlock the potential of energy efficiency to deliver healthy, comfortable buildings, productive, competitive businesses, and an affordable, reliable and sustainable energy system for Australia. To find out how your organisation can get involved, visit eec.org.au/membership.
RE100 is also giving you a vehicle to do a little bit of what you were doing with Smart Money back on Sky Business and get some of those stories out there. And you already mentioned your new program that's launching in just a couple of weeks. Can you tell us a little bit about that Energy Insights initiative?
Yeah, so the idea is to have a 10 or 15 minute conversation with a globally leading sustainability business person who can share with us how they're going 100% renewable and how they undertook that journey. How have they become more energy efficient? How did they engage their teams? How are they engaging their suppliers? It's interesting. Apple is a great example of a company that's not just gone 100% renewable themselves. They've now reached out to their supply chain and asked them to join them on this 100% renewable journey. They have now signed up 73 major suppliers who, you know, think about how big Apple is. They've got over 1 billion active devices around the world. And bringing that supply chain with them, you know, effectively this, you know, if you don't go 100% renewable or commit to that, there's no reason for Apple to continue working with you. So we're seeing members of RE100 bring their supply chains along with them. And so what I'm doing with the Energy Insights series and the interview with Lisa Jackson should be launching on March the 25th, it basically is there to kind of show how other companies have done it, to try and help people learn from other people's experience. I think it's really important that we don't reinvent the wheel when we go off and do these kind of things. One of the great things about RE100 is that there's a great exchange of information between different companies. You know, so for example, one company that's about to join is a bit stuck on what to do in Indonesia with regards to going renewable over there. Now, we've got a number of businesses that have got big operations in Indonesia, so we're looking at how we could bring those people together to help facilitate that kind of change. And the idea of the Energy Insights video series is to ask those kind of questions, to kind of get people to talk about the solutions that they've implemented, and then hopefully people watching at all of the RE100 member companies and companies that might be joining us, the idea is to inspire people with solutions. And certainly with the interview with Lisa, she is such an amazing woman. You know, she was the head of the American EPA under Barack Obama, did some amazing work there. She has transformed Apple on a sustainability basis. And under her leadership, you know, they've gone 100% renewable. And so in this discussion, we've talked about how she's done that, and it's a fascinating interview.
So important, isn't it? The ability to share those stories very rapidly as we move through this transition, and companies that are taking a lead, extracting the insights that they're generating, and as you say, communicating them to their peers. The other thing that strikes me from what you were just talking about, John, was the importance of the supply chains, and we're starting to see that not just, you know, through global leaders like Apple, but it's already occurring here in Australia, notably, as you say, in the property sector, which is really world leading, and they're thinking very carefully about emissions from their supply chain and how they work with manufacturers that are producing building products and the like, just to give one example, and how they move beyond what has really been the focus in the last decade, which has been operational efficiency and carbon working towards carbon neutrality in their operations to the embodied carbon, which is going to be one of the real key focus points for the next 10 or 15 years. That interestingly sort of brings us back to some of those smaller organisations, doesn't it? Almost certainly going to be in the supply chains of some of the larger organisations, and that is another way in which they're potentially brought on the journey. And what I really am heartened by is not the idea of big corporates kind of waving around a big stick, but when I hear stories like the one I heard from the lead sustainability manager at Line, who became Australia's first carbon neutral beer recently and was talking in really excited terms about the opportunity they have to support their supply chain on this journey, and to do on a business to business level what you're doing through your interview series, which is sharing the learnings and helping them along that journey.
And it's a good point you raised there, because again, one of the issues that Lisa Jackson from Apple talked about is how they actually have a team of people at Apple who recognize that for a lot of their supply chain, reducing their carbon emissions and switching to renewable energy is not a core skill set of their business. And so what Apple have been doing is actually sharing their knowledge with their supply chain, understanding that it's not necessarily the skill set that they were set up to do. So what is interesting is how a company like that, and I'm sure Lion, and there are certainly lots of examples of other companies doing the same thing. If you are making that commitment to going 100% renewable, but you have within your supply chain, most of your energy for your products are actually being used by your suppliers, you have a duty to make sure that it's not just you that goes 100% renewable. You need to take everyone else with you. And what's been encouraging with RE100 is how many, really big supply chain companies have pledged to go 100% renewable. And I think the other issue on the supply chain, as we're on that topic, is we're going to be seeing, there's a lot of talk about the transition to electric vehicles. Without a doubt, the biggest transition, the fastest transition on that side is going to be with, electric deliveries. You know, IKEA has already pledged to go 100% clean energy vehicles. I guess most of that will be with the battery-powered electric vehicles, because they've got relatively smaller trucks. But then you've got Amazon, you've got DHL, major supply chain entities are ordering vast amounts of trucks and vans to make sure that within the next, you know, we're talking like 3 to 7 years, many of these companies will have 100% clean energy fleets. And I don't think people have actually caught up to that yet as to how quickly that supply chain is changing. And one of the things that companies can do that are going 100% renewable, getting expertise in PPAs, they can share that kind of expertise on how to do power purchase agreements with their suppliers who have those electric trucks. Because if we can have all those electric trucks and vans in the supply chain using power purchase agreements, firstly, it's going to make, you know, the energy needed to power those vehicles a lot cheaper. It means that, you know, instead of using coal-fired power, you can be using renewables instead. And it's only going to hasten and speed up that transition to the clean energy economy. And it's going to open up, I think, in Australia, if we do it right, there are lots of opportunities for trucks and vans to be made here, because, you know, when it comes to making electric vehicles, it's a lot simpler than actually making the traditional vehicles. And I think there's huge opportunity there for new jobs. You know, Beyond Zero Emissions had that million jobs plan, as you know, to look at what could a new energy economy look like. And I think that within the supply chain, there's a lot that businesses listening now can do to bring their partners on that journey with them.
Yeah, the opportunity associated with electrification of transport is a really interesting one in an Australian context, because obviously, timed right, it does allow us to take advantage of those burgeoning renewable resources as the grid transitions, but also, you know, the area that we're paying close attention to in terms of the energy management opportunity is the ability to use EVs and their batteries as effectively a resource on the grid to support balancing out that variable renewable energy. So, you know, a really integral part of a 21st century energy system. And if we do that, if we manage that load in a smart way, it can actually help the transition in that system rather than be a problem that needs to be managed.
Look, you're absolutely right. Yeah, look, it's interesting. I've just placed an order for the new Hyundai IONIQ 5. It's just been announced, and it's the first of the bi-directional cars that, you know, I've got a pretty good idea on the price. I think it's going to be a similar price to the Model 3. But what's interesting is that it is, you can put your energy into the car, obviously, but you can also take energy out of it as well. Mm. And I think, you know, I was in Japan a few years ago looking at what Mitsubishi was doing on that front. And, you know, they already had a prototype house that actually used the power from the battery in the car to run the entire house. And, you know, we already have in my home, we've got an 8 kilowatt solar system, we've got a 13 kilowatt hour battery. We're already using that, but we're now looking at, okay, well, when this car comes, hopefully, you know, it'll be in the third quarter of this year, how do we incorporate our electric car? It's got a, you know, there's a 58 kilowatt hour battery, there's a 72 kilowatt hour battery version. You know, that can keep you going for a long time, you know, and we get a lot of power cuts in the Blue Mountains. And so we found it's been for, you know, we run two businesses out of our house. We've got two offices here. And so one of the things that people don't talk about is that if you do have batteries, people always say, but how many years will it take for it to pay itself back? I tell you what, when you have regular power cuts like we have in the Blue Mountains and your battery kicks in and you don't lose a minute of productive time, it pays for itself a lot quicker when you take into account the cost saving of not having your business not working because you don't have power. And so, you know, the second-hand car batteries, I see that the government is putting funds into an Australian business that's going to take those, you know, and I saw this in Japan where you had some of the earlier electric cars. The cars themselves were getting scrapped, the batteries were getting taken out, assessed, quality controlled, and then had a new casing put on them, and then they were being leased to businesses. And so there's going to be a big secondhand market for big batteries, because after 10 years of driving an electric vehicle with a battery in it, you've probably still got 80% capacity in what is an extremely large battery. So I think for a lot of businesses, you're going to see this increase in supply of secondhand vehicles in the years ahead. And I think that can only be a good thing for business.
Well, John, we're almost out of time, but I guess what this conversation will have brought home to our listeners is all the different parts of the puzzle that need to come together to facilitate an efficient, equitable energy transition. And I can say that we're very lucky here in Australia to have communicators as gifted as you to tell those stories and to join those dots for the households and businesses that are working their way through what can be a pretty complex landscape. So I, for one, am pleased you're out there banging the drum.
And look, and if anyone is listening now and you use a lot of energy in your business, do get in touch with me via the RE100 website. And if you want a free copy of the Energy Cut book, there's actually an interactive version. If you go to johnd.com, that's johnd.com/books, you'll be able to download that for free.
Wonderful. I'm sure many of our listeners will be hitting that website right now. Well, that wraps up this episode of First Fuel. If you have comments, you can find us on Twitter. John is at JohnDOz and my handle is at Luke Menzel. And to keep up to date on the latest in energy efficiency, energy management, demand response, you can follow the Energy Efficiency Council at EE Council. If Twitter is not your thing, you can email the team. The address is firstfuel@eec.org.au, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to First Fuel in your podcast app of choice. And to learn more about the show, including upcoming live recordings, visit eec.org.au/podcasts. But for now, it's goodbye from us, and we'll catch you soon.